Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very senior and accomplished professional from the US, Mr. Brett Packard. Brett, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Ashutosh. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Brett is the founder and CEO of the Packard Network, which is growing leaders that grow leaders. He has earlier spent time with Citibank, Barclays, and ANZ Bank. So Brett, let's start by talking about the Packard Network. Tell me about the network, what do you do, and what was your motivation to start it?
Sure, absolutely. Well, after spending roughly 30 years working across 30 countries, living in different parts of the world, in the kind of the corporate world for the three institutions, great institutions you mentioned, I acquired a lot of knowledge, experience, and wisdom from that experience, and mainly from different cultures. And to me, I'm not the most unique person in the world, it is a bit of uniqueness that I've acquired over those years. And so about 6 years ago, my wife and I decided to leave corporate life and to caretake for her parents. They had some, they were falling ill with their health. And so we basically made it possible for them to live the balance of their lives in their house. And so I went from corporate life of living in airplanes and hotels to becoming a domestic cover to support my wife and caretaking of hand washing dishes, doing laundry and preparing a couple meals a day. And that's basically what I did. So the Packard Network was something that during this time in between those duties, household duties, I would basically put together a forum and a platform for sharing key concepts that I lived over those 30 years. Wow. And there's a famous Tony Robbins mentor is a guy named Jim Rohn, who many of the viewers would recognize that name. And Jim Rohn, I had the fortunate opportunity to go to one of his seminars back in 1988. And one of the things that Mr. Rohn says, I put to the test for 30 years. And that is basically, he said, don't treat your brain like a filing cabinet, write it down. So I kept a daily journal for 30 years. Amazing. And every day I would write down a key concept from that day. So one of the things that the Packard Network does is that it takes those concepts every day. I post a concept from what is their 89 journals that I acquired. I'm old fashioned dinosaur type of person. So I handwrite stuff, right? And I would just extract a concept from that I feel is relevant to today's world that will hopefully save other people years in their development with something as well. So that's one thing the Packard Network does. The second thing it does is similar to what the Brand Called You does on a much smaller basis, where my objective is not scalability. My objective is to basically take leaders that are successful, highlight them, and talk to them in a weekly live stream about how they design their success. When they get down, how do they deploy faith and confidence to bring continue to carry themselves forward? And in the case of women, what are women doing what do they recommend that other women do to elevate themselves in the executive ranks? And for men, what are men doing to support women, et cetera? So a lot of different topics like that I do. And the Packard Network is kind of the wrapper that goes around all of this, which is basically to say, here's a global perspective with proven concept, leadership concepts and culture that has worked around the world that anybody can take and apply today.
Incredible. And, you know, I'm just wondering, with 89 journals and a thought for each day, I don't know how many books you can probably churn out with all those thoughts that you have there.
Maybe. Yeah. And I, you know, that's a common question. I get asked that a lot. Okay. And, you know, but basically, yeah, I think at this point, I just haven't had the capacity to write a book. So I've decided to just kind of,
let
drip
things go.
Release it. Yeah. Drip release it. And I just wrote one this morning. It's up on, you can see all of these on my LinkedIn feed every day, and they all come from a real life experience. So I'm not going in and pulling a quote from the internet. I'm actually digging into those 89 books. And I wrote one this morning on passive aggressiveness, which is one of these stealth behaviors that is poison for a company that a lot of people don't know how to detect. Mm-hmm. So that's just a real current. And I wrote one from 1996 in San Francisco that on an actual case that happens, and hopefully putting it out there. And I've already had massive responses this morning about some people haven't heard of this before. And now that they are, they can, you know, kind of get their arms around it. So that's the type of impact I'm looking to make.
How interesting.
Through this. Yeah.
How interesting. And, you know, you also mentioned that you are growing leaders that grow leaders. Help me understand this phrase and maybe give me an example or a couple of examples.
Sure, I'd be happy to. It's a great question, and one that it might sound like some buzzwords to some people, but, you know, basically I know you and I are going to talk a lot about culture and leadership in this discussion, but one, I'll just start off with a simple analogy of what it is and answer your question. And that is, if you and I need to eat, and we all need to eat, so, and we have access to a lake, and I'm the leader, and you're the follower, and you're the worker. Okay. It's not my job to just catch fish and put it on your plate so you can eat it. So what I'll do is I'll provide you with the fishing pole, the bait, and the technique. We'll hold hands, we'll go together, and I will teach you how to catch fish so that basically going forward, you're able to self-sustain what you're able to do. And that's really what going back to leadership and your question, that's what leaders that grow leaders, they don't focus on putting food on the table. Sure, that's a byproduct of this. But what the focus of a leader that grows leaders is teaching others how to self-provide for themselves. And that's a big gap that's missing in today's world in 2022. One of the things that's happened over the past decade, and then the pandemic accelerated it in North America and specifically the United States, is the fact that the Great Resignation has happened because of cultural cracks and gaps and craters to some extent that basically are not healthy relationships between leadership and employees. So leaders that grow leaders is not, I'm not a consultant. I'm an ex CEO that similar to you, I'm giving back and sharing things that I've learned with a specific objective of helping prepare leaders to lead the next generation, including Gen Y and Gen Z, which, by the way, are very different characteristics, and they require different leadership tacks. And so my specific focus is to only focus on this aspect of giving people a fishing pole and teaching them how to fish.
Amazing. And based on all your own 3 decades of experience as a banker and working with so many leaders from around the world, what would you say are some of the key attributes a good leader should have?
Great question. So to answer your question, a great leader needs to have a vision. They need to understand culture and ecosystems, the environment in which people operate. They need to think of their mission in terms of people instead of just plans. You've got to have a plan, right? But a manager, someone more narrowly focused on the day-to-day, getting stuff done, compliance, all of that stuff, they need to stay focused on plans, okay? Leaders need to focus on the people that are doing those plans, making sure that those are executed. Also, instead of thinking about tasks, a key characteristic of a leader is to think about teams. So not only, individual people, but teams of people, and how you can take different functional and line frontline teams and combine them together to deliver a world-class output, you know, hopefully. So strategy is another one. Strategy is, sure, leaders need to be strategic thinkers, but I look at that slightly differently, where I basically look at, okay, a key difference between a leader and a manager, okay, is a leader characteristic having a clear vision for the company so that people can understand the purpose and the mission of the company, not to spend all your time on strategy. Okay. That can be handed to managers once it's, you know, defined at the top, and the strategy, and that can be used as a development tool for a manager to develop into a leader, because everything is a phased approach in the real world. So having that vision, making sure that all of your people understand the purpose and feel a purpose themselves. Right. Those are the characteristics, in my opinion, of a great leader.
Amazing, amazing. And, you know, there's an old line of Peter Drucker, which said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. I'd love to get your perspective, given the fact that you have worked in 30 different countries. How does culture impact leadership?
Great, great question. And I Peter, I have the utmost respect for Peter. My experience, which is completely different from Peter, we're all different, right? So I love that statement. But I on that particular statement, I would modify it a little bit, saying that, okay, I'll buy that culture eats strategy for breakfast, but I would also say that you and I need to eat lunch and dinner.
Oh, absolutely.
And so which means that a good culture with no strategy is a problem. Okay, so you've got to really have both. And I think a lot about this, if I could, and then I'll get to the specific answer. But I think a lot of it as a smartphone. A smartphone is a beautiful piece of hardware that also has software inside. Okay. And specific to your question, that piece of hardware is really the leadership and management, as you and I've just spoken about.
Yeah.
But the software, the SIM card, the computer chip, and the programming that goes inside of that phone, if you don't have that, that phone's not going to work, right? Yeah. So one of the key things, one of the key differences between the culture and leadership, back to your question, is that software component inside the phone, right? What makes it work? Now, let me bring this outside of the phone into the real world. So what does that mean? It really means a good culture is an environment where people, this is my own definition, where people basically, how people feel about where they're working. And there's a couple things that you can do to do quick diagnostics on this. It doesn't do the thorough physical exam, but quick diagnostics. And one is, how do you feel on Monday morning? And how do you feel on Friday afternoon?
Correct.
The responses to those two questions will give, again, not a complete picture, but a good diagnostic on what the culture might be like in a company. If people are just on Monday, they're waiting for next weekend, you got a little problem there, right? So, you know, but a robust company, you have people coming to work on Monday and they said, I can't wait to get to work today. Wow. And then on Friday, they say, I can't wait to spend the weekend with my family, get recharged to come back here on Monday. Yeah. Yeah. Now, not every company can really say that. So I think that's Brett Packard's own definition of really what
that's a great definition. Culture does. That's a great definition. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sure. So moving on, Brett, you know, let's talk a little bit about transformation, because whenever you want to grow leaders, it is something that each one of us has to think about. How do I transform first myself and my organization? And yet, every time I have worked with a senior leader, everyone likes status quo and maybe status quo ante. How do you work with leaders and persuade them to transform?
Yeah, I think it's a great a point, because you've got, and that's a loaded question. That's the $100,000 question, mm-hmm. right? That if people can find the answer. So I'll give you my answer to that. And it starts with a realization by the leader, if it's the CEO or the, let's say, the executive team, mm-hmm. right? That is embarking upon the transformation. Mm-hmm. Rule number one is to confirm a hypothesis that you're going to have some levels of layers of management in big, you know, I ran big scaled businesses. So with lots of people, 5 to 7 levels, sometimes 3 to 4 levels in between where I was and where the customer is. And so one of the first hypotheses mm-hmm. to test is that you might have, and in many cases you do have, middle management blockers.
Right.
So these are people that, now sometimes you will have them in the senior ranks. Mm-hmm. And so that's a different issue. But let's assume that we've got a good intact leadership team that's ready to embark upon that transformation. You will need some programs, okay, to detect mm-hmm. If you have blocking by middle management, because, mm-hmm. and just yesterday, I talked about passive aggressiveness this morning. Mm-hmm. Just yesterday, I wrote about another, what I'll call a poison to businesses, which is passive resistance. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is another one of those stealth areas, and middle management in many companies is very good at passive resistance. Okay. And this is a very dangerous thing that leadership must learn. So I work with leaders on how do you detect mm-hmm. This type of passive resistance, and correct. You know, how are you going to do this? So that's really a step number one. Mm-hmm. Answer to your question is understand that, because that's real world. It doesn't matter what you do if you have blockers in between what you're trying to do mm-hmm. and the front line. That's crucial. The second thing that I would say off the top of my head to do in transformation is involve the people that are transacting with your revenue source. So mm-hmm. let's say customers, right? Involve them in the design of mm-hmm. the transformation. Okay. For a couple of reasons. One mm-hmm. is they know what's going on, right? They know what's going on. The real-time feedback. You don't need to wait for hire a bunch of consulting companies, get a bunch of surveys out there. They know what's going on. So, but number two, and equally importantly, or probably more importantly, is the fact, just the mere fact that they're involved mm-hmm. in the design of what their future work environment will be like, mm-hmm. You're going to have much higher engagement, because, you know, one of the things of a poor culture that I didn't talk about a few minutes ago mm-hmm. is that you have a disconnect in engagement. Right. So right. you can have the best program, best transformation program anywhere, but if people aren't engaged in it and you're performing below an HPO, mm-hmm. that's a big problem. So I would say that those are two critical things. And then maybe the third one, it is kind of a subset of the second one, which is basically to, as you're engaging with people, apply mm-hmm. something that I call ALA. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's an engagement technique that works incredibly well. It's stupid simple. And the ALA means ask, listen, and act. Wow. The sequence is very important, because mm-hmm. if you look at companies that, mm-hmm. that stumble, okay. Yeah. And a lot of companies, they decide we're going to take an action, mm-hmm. okay? And they don't ever engage the front line. And then the front line sees this new action coming down. They say, well, what does this mean? And right. you didn't think that this is going to increase the cycle time delivery by 2 weeks. So now we're dealing with a bunch of complaints. Mm-hmm. So ask. So before you act, ask questions. Mm-hmm. The L means listen. Listen to what they're saying, truly mm-hmm. listen. Mm-hmm. Don't jump to the solution yet.
Yeah.
And then based on those first two, then you can take an action. And that sequence is critically important. Nice. So that's what I would say to really, if you do these three things, your transformation is going to get down the road. And obviously it gets a lot more technical, because mm-hmm. then you've got to get into things like project planning and tracking, but that'd be a waste of our time today. You've got a lot of other people that can talk about that. Yeah.
So, Brett, I've got time for one more question.
Sure.
And I want to ask this question for a lot of our viewers and listeners who will be listening to our conversation. Mm-hmm. Based on an amazing corporate career and the fact that you gave it all up to look after elders in the family and then have started off an amazing organization like the Packard Network, what would you say are three life lessons or three lessons that you would want our viewers and listeners to take away from our conversation?
Great, great question. So, okay, let me digest, process that. Really. So number one, this again is I'm hopefully I'm saying some things in this discussion, Ashutosh, that people won't find in a textbook anywhere.
Absolutely.
Okay. So number one life lesson for me that really always stands out is my definition of leadership. Mm-hmm. And to me, after all of these years and all of this experience in different cultures, to me, leadership is quite simple. Mm-hmm. It's really setting up an ecosystem where people can be the best they can be and they feel good about it. Mm-hmm. End of story. And you can slap on all the fancy Harvard definitions and everything, but to me, it really comes down to how do people feel. That's and it. You have a different potential than I do, right? And we're, it doesn't make you or I better than one another. We're just different. You know, God made us that way. So so basically, have I set up an ecosystem where you can perform at your best and Jane Smith can perform at her best, right? So that's number one. Leadership really is all about how people feel. Number two, how to deal with adversity. I've dealt with four in big companies. I've had four major economic crises over my my career span, right? So the first was the Asian financial crisis, 1997. The Thai baht blew up and created something called the Asian financial crisis. So I was in the U.S. at the time, but a year after that, I was recruited to basically go over to Asia to help build processes on the back of the Asian financial crisis, right? Okay. Number two was 9/11. 9/11 happened. I was in Japan running distribution for a Citibank, basically, that had a number one market share in foreign currency with very few branches, big business. But 9/11 happened and people obviously get concerned about their money, right? So we figured out how to do that. Number three was the global financial crisis in the mid to late 2000s. And I was in London at the time, one of the epicenters of that as well. And we successfully transformed a culture and found ways to gain market share despite that turmoil. And customers loved us. Okay. And obviously the fourth one is pandemic. You know, this is definitely classifies as a crisis, right? So based on those four things, what I would say in response to your question is, you hear a lot of people talk about IQ and EQ. Okay. Mm-hmm. Your viewers probably hear from a lot of people about that. I'm not going to talk about those things. They're important, but I'm going to talk about something that maybe a lot of your viewers have not heard, which is AQ, adversity quotient. Now, some may have heard of it. Okay. I'm sure you've heard of it. I know because you're globally connected, but AQ, adversity quotient, without getting into the details, you want a high one. You don't want a low one. Okay. Because the real world will have adversity. Right. And so there's three things, my lessons from, for driving up your ability to handle adversity. Number one, don't blame others for the problem. Correct. Don't waste 1 minute blaming somebody else. Number two, don't blame yourself for the problem. I learned this at a very young age. Don't blame yourself. It doesn't help. Right. And number three, understand that this crisis or adversity is limited in scope and duration. It's not of cosmic importance and it can be dealt with. Okay. And this will help you keep a cool head and a level head, and especially when it comes to leading and building a culture that can sustain shocks of adversity. So that would be number two, how to deal with adversity, with a bonus on how to get it done. That mindset's important. Number three, I would say whether you're reading the news, you know, the way I consume news is mm-hmm. that if I read something, I don't believe it. Mm-hmm. I form my own opinion. So I read something. So I listen to what people say mm-hmm. and read what people write. And then I also read what people don't write mm-hmm. and read what people don't say.
Correct.
And I've learned that this can be very effective in building trust with somebody mm-hmm. that you've just met, building rapport with an important a client or colleague on something. That if you have we have a brain. So if you read something, who's to say that you should believe that 100%? Mm-hmm. So form your own opinion, right? Read it. And then ask yourself, what did they not write about?
Mm.
And then I think that will maybe stimulate your own mind to say, okay, well, this is my opinion, right, of what this is. And it's not just news, but it can be any business situation. If you're interviewing somebody for an executive level position,
yeah.
and you're asking the questions, do some probing to also identify what they're not telling you, right? And sometimes these less obvious signs can be the most powerful and most insightful.
Well said. But on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. I've learned some really amazing things from you today, and I'm sure my viewers and listeners have as well. I mean, you spoke at length about adversity quotient and how important it is to have that quotient as high as possible. So it means you can be able to handle as much adversity as possible. And I completely agree with you. I loved your commentary on ALA, which is ask, listen, and act, which I think is really what you would say is an actionable kind of a thought that you have given to all of us. Thank you for sharing with me your own journey about all the work that you're doing to grow leaders. And thank you for talking to me about transformation and everything else that you're doing. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you so much. It was absolutely my pleasure to appear on your program, and I look forward to maybe doing it again someday.
I look forward to
thank
that.
Thank you, Ashutosh.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. A platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.